what does it mean to witness our own lives? A few years ago, I went on the Unitarian Universalist Living Legacy Civil Rights Pilgrimage to Alabama and Mississippi. 40 of us from all over the country piled into a big tour bus and drove around to places where significant struggles occurred, visiting museums, cemeteries, churches, and meeting veterans of the civil rights movement. Someone who is particularly dedicated to witnessing this period of history is Joanne Bland, an incredible freedom fighter who still lives right where she grew up in Selma, Alabama. She has the distinction of being the youngest person jailed in civil rights demonstrations at 11 years old. She wasn't even bragging when she mentioned this astonishing fact because, she said, almost as an aside, at that time she'd already been a movement activist for 3 years. When I met Joanne Bland, she took me to the uneven, cracked pavement behind Brown Chapel. This was where marchers gathered before heading to the Edmund Pettus Bridge, where armed officers attacked peaceful demonstrators on what became known as Bloody Sunday. Joanne told us all to bend down, find a stone, and pick it up. Then she challenged our group. "You can toss your stone back," she said, "and just walk away. You don't have to be connected to this history. But keeping your stone is a commitment to care. It's a promise to be present with us and with what happened here." I kept my stone. I still have it. Right away, it was a potent reminder of how much this movement transformed our world and of my gratitude for it. But then, the meaning of this tiny rock began to broaden. Somehow, it became good company, and so I still hold on to it. Being present to my Selma pilgrimage helps me to be present to my own everyday life, because it reminds me to notice where I am, emotionally and physically, and to pay attention to what happens in my life, whether good or bad, momentous or insignificant. I remember turning it over and over and over in my hands a couple years ago as a friend sobbed over the phone after the death of her mother. And last spring, as sort of a last-minute inspiration, I tossed my little stone into my suitcase before I hopped on a plane to go and officiate at my best friend's wedding. When I feel my rock, it connects me to what is solid. It anchors me in my own life. I am not the only person to imbue stones with special meaning, as any child with a pet rock will know. And this fellowship has its own stone practice. Each time you come to services or enter this building at all during the week, you may select a stone from the bowl in the back by the front doors and place a stone from it into our chalice to mark a joy or concern you are holding and wish to silently share. In fact, many cultures and people use stones to mark graves or to signify a place as holy or important. I think one of the reasons people do this is that rocks represent that which has stood the test of time. The oldest known rocks on Earth come from the northwest part of Canada, and they are over 4 billion years old. Now, of course, rocks are still forming today. The very youngest ones are made from the cooled magma of volcanoes. And there are active volcanoes today. And so rocks are still being created. But most stones are on that older side. They provide us with a connection to the ancient Earth and all she has witnessed for over 4 billion years. That is some company to have. Inspired by all of this, I began giving out rocks. On a bookshelf in my office sits this bowl, which is just on a little field trip here for now. It is full of rocks that I have collected from Lake Michigan and from my front yard and from a freshwater spring in Florida and also from the ocean in Northern California. I like to offer these rocks to people who need a faithful, portable, low-maintenance companion to witness them. Sometimes I give them out because someone is celebrating a milestone birthday or admission to graduate school, but sometimes it is because they are struggling with depression or grief, or just find themselves in a time of transition or discernment without anything to hold on to. If you ever find yourself wanting something to hold on to, I hope that you will consider stopping by my office for a stone. People that I have given them to report that they feel nice in their pocket or at the bottom of a purse, and sometimes they are returned to me and then can be passed on again. And other times they go on to bless the gardens or altars or kitchen countertops or the trunk of cars of those who took them home and forgot about them. Every once in a while, someone has brought me a rock they found on their own journey through the world. And so I invite you not only to swing by and ask me for a rock, but also to contribute one for someone else if you ever feel so moved. When my job description says that I am here to offer and coordinate pastoral care, obviously that means a little more than just passing out stones, right? Of course, I have joined Roger in the work of officiating weddings and memorials, visiting and listening and accompanying in a variety of ways, all of this done with the help of lay leaders. We want to acknowledge that the lay ministry program here is evolving and the pastoral care part is still in transition. And so your patience about the nuts and bolts of that is just so appreciated. But today we explore something a little different. The ways that each of us can witness our own lives and the tools we might use to do so. Witnessing is that intangible gift that allows us to know that we are not alone, that some presence or feeling accompanies us. In life, we face a paradox. In a fundamental sense, we are witnessed by the wide world, by ourselves, by each other, by rocks and music and the silence that surrounds us, by anything and everything. But also, just as certainly, we all come into the world alone, and we all die alone. That can be a lonely realization. And thus, we sometimes need a symbol, a literal touchstone, like an actual stone to touch, to recall us to the resources and connections we have. With simple stones that represent so many years in the making, we witness our own lives.
Gaia witness!
Witnessing can be experienced in many ways, but today we concentrate on just three. Stones, and also music, and then silence. In the same way that stones might provide touchstones to what is solid in a rapidly shifting world, music can also recall us to beauty or maybe help us experience it for the first time. Beauty is different than pretty, which usually describes only the external. Real beauty is internally experienced. It softens as well as toughens, opening us to what is tender and true in life, even when we might be hardened by anger or numb by pain. In my life, a primary way that I access the beauty of music is here at the Fellowship. Our theme this month is honesty, and so I will admit what you are bound to find out one day, which is that I am a terrible singer. But you don't have to be a good singer to come here. Getting to participate in singing the hymns makes me feel so happy, because even if it's not quite true, I feel like I'm helping to make the noise joyful. And I know that anyone who has been here before has had the opportunity to appreciate the power of a perfectly chosen offering selection or an incredibly uplifting piece of special music. It feels so good to listen. When I was a chaplain at a Catholic hospital in Washington State, we had a staff harpist who used to just wander the halls asking if she might play for the patients and their families that she encountered. No amount of music could reverse a terminal diagnosis or fix the loss of a loved one. But I saw firsthand how soothing it was for people to be able to pause the confusion and fear often present in a hospital environment and hear the beautiful sounds in the midst of a hard and scary time. Music is often pastoral. And that's actually something we'd like to start offering formally here, even outside of the weekend services. Jennifer Legenhaven is a friend of the Fellowship who is working on professional certification in therapeutic music. She is not a psychotherapist or a counselor. Those are equally good, but very different kinds of therapeutic endeavors. Her work is in pastoral music. And she is making herself available for 20-minute sessions of music to those in the Fellowship, whether you meet her here or at your home or hospital bed. This is a real gift she is offering us. Not many institutions have pastoral music programs, although congregations and nursing homes and hospitals and hospice facilities are beginning to recognize their worth, and research scientists are starting to promote the healing powers of listening to music. Jennifer plays the violin, the piano or keyboard, the guitar, and the accordion. If you might like to experience her music, or you know someone else in our community who might benefit, I hope you will get in touch with me and schedule a pastoral music appointment. This can be a gentle way to help you face a challenge, whether that is an illness, a divorce, a loss of some kind. And I urge you to consider taking advantage of the opportunity to reflect on your life while surrounded by beautiful music played just for you. This kind of witnessing by oneself and for oneself is one way to practice honesty. It encourages us to be in touch with our experiences for no purpose other than knowing and understanding personal truth. It is a tool for accurately assessing reality without judgment. Music doesn't pronounce fault, and it doesn't give advice. It's neutral, not in the unfeeling sense, but in that you have nothing to prove to it. The witness provided by music won't halt pain. It does not have that power. But it might break the bond of isolation and allow you to feel connected. With music that calls us out of ourselves and invites us back into our core, we witness our own lives.
Can I get a witness?
Silence can also emphasize the profound. Arundhati Roy, the author, activist, and one of my personal heroes, expresses this beautifully. Another world is not only possible, she is on her way. On a quiet day, I can hear her breathing. What is it about the hum of silence that can be so powerful? Our third and final perspective on witnessing today comes from Dr. Rachel Naomi Remen, who does groundbreaking work in the mind-body holistic health movement and is a nationally recognized medical reformer and educator who views the practice of medicine as a spiritual path. She writes about a story told to her by a very highly skilled AIDS doctor named Louisa. When Louisa was very small, her kitten was killed in an accident. It was her first experience of death, and she had been devastated. Her parents had encouraged her not to be sad, telling her that the kitten was in heaven now with God. Despite these assurances, she had not been comforted. She had prayed to God, asking him to give her kitten back, but God did not respond. In her anguish, she turned to her grandmother and asked, "Why?" Her grandmother had not told her that her kitten was in heaven, as so many other adults had. Instead, she simply held her and reminded her of the time when her grandfather had died. She, too, had prayed to God, but God had not brought Grandpa back. She did not know why. Louisa had turned into the soft warmth of her grandmother's shoulder then and sobbed. When finally she was able to look up, she saw that her grandmother was crying as well. Although her grandmother could not answer her question, a great loneliness had gone, and Louisa felt that she was able to go on. About this experience, Louisa says, "My grandmother was a lap, a place of silent refuge. I know a great deal about AIDS," she continues, "but what I really want to be for my patients is a lap, a still and quiet place from which they can face what they have to face, but to not be alone." Louisa now has the practice of sitting quietly with her grandmother's picture each day when she wakes up, in order to re-experience the way her grandmother witnessed her as a child, and also as a way to fuel her own work, which is to offer empathetic witness to others. Rachel Naomi Remen sums it up like this: "Perhaps the most important thing we bring is the silence in us, not the sort of silence that is filled with unspoken criticism or hard withdrawal, but the sort of silence that is a place of refuge, of rest, of acceptance. We are all hungry for this other silence. It is hard to find. In its presence, we can remember something beyond the moment. We can find the strength on which to build a life. Silence is a great place of power and healing. Silence is God's lap." Appreciation for meaningful silence can be cultivated. In the service each week, we practice growing our silences with our time of meditation. Usually this happens after we share our community's joys and concerns, but today we've moved it so that as we enter into quiet together in a few moments, we might explore it for the sense of refuge and companionship that Luisa's story recommends to us. This is witness, the certainty that even when all alone, we are not truly bereft of good company. Companionship takes many forms. The silence within and without us witnesses. Music witnesses too. So can even a humble rock. With these and so many other practices, may we always witness our own lives.
Can I go with this? Hallelujah.